the green light came on, and I got up, everybody got up, started pushing, and I was shoving. We got just about everybody out, and the guy in front of me, he was carrying a 60-millimeter mortar on him. Of course, I had my maps, I had my rifle, I had everything else. I had grenades. We were carrying spare rounds of ammunition for the machine gun because we had no supply whatsoever. We had to use all of our men for supply people, mules. So by the time we get ready to jump, the guy in front of me slipped on the floor. Took me about, I guess, 3 or 4 seconds to get him on his feet. Got him on his feet, hooked up, back hooked up, kicked him out of the airplane, and I jumped. Like I say, where I jumped, I had no idea in the world. And all I know, it took me about, I guess, 90 seconds to get down. It seemed like 3 hours because stuff was coming through my parachute, and you could hear the bullets and shrapnel coming through my parachute. No big deal. Everybody else had the same thing. A lot of people got killed on the way down. Finally, I didn't hit the ground at all. I hit a bunch of cows, as I said, and they start mooing. So I figured, I said, hell, if they start mooing, they must be ashamed. The Germans didn't know what was going on, so I started to moo too. Finally, I cut myself out of the horns of the cows and so forth, got on the ground, had no idea where I was at all. None. Like I said before, had I known, I wouldn't be here now. I'd have dropped dead right then. Finally, I picked up about 18 men total. I knew exactly where I had to go because they had tracer planes up in the sky. As you see tonight, the astronauts in the shade of the sun, they had things to tell us north and south. They had a tracer planes. So I knew I had to go northwest. So I started northwest. Finally, about 5 minutes, I told these guys, I said, look, we don't know where we are. We better find out. These people in Normandy do know anything about the area. They're farmers. They know everything. We better find out where we are so we know how to get to where we want to go. Well, finally, we picked out this place. We didn't know whether it was a block, anti-aircraft block or what, but anyhow, I knocked on the door like it was Sunday morning, and the farmer came to the door with his wife, and I forgot that a lot of these guys had black faces and true cuts, mohawk cuts, so it looked like hell. Scared the hell of the woman. Scared the hell of the farmer. She started screaming, and I grabbed her by the mouth and put her down on the floor. And I said to the farmer, direction. We found out a few words before we went into Normandy. He said, we. So I pulled out a map, and I said, St. Mary Glees. And he pointed, we, St. Mary Glees. I said, we. I said, St. Comme de Mont. He said, oui. St. Comme de Mont. I oriented the map. I finally said, Brevan. He said, oui. Then I said, Carentan. He knocked on the ground, on the floor. Oui, Carentan. So I said, Carentan. He said, oui. I said, oh, my God, we're in Carentan. So I said, boys, we better get the hell out of here right now. So we started out. Finally, we passed a bunch of woods, followed the river up to the bridges. A colonel came out of the woods, Colonel Johnson of the 502nd. He said, Sergeant, he said, do you know where we are? I said, yes, sir, I know exactly where we are. He said, show me. Pulled out a map, had a flashlight, I showed him. He took about two or three of my men and went one way, and we had to go the other way. And that's finally when we got up to the bridges, and that was the first day we had. But as I said before, the Germans thought 200,000 of us landed in Normandy, and it scared the hell out of them. Thank you very much.
Ed, thank you.
Yes,
and and to introduce one of his compadres from that day, Rene Kepperling of the 5th Ranger Battalion. Where are you, sir? You are here? They were here. Well, they were here. Thank you. Hey, back to John. John, talk about us when you got to England. What happened when you arrived in England? How much preparation, how much, you know, how many activities and so on?
You know, it was fairly well organized when we got to Duxford, England, which is an airport run by the Imperial War Museum. And again, Eric put up rapidly a pretty good flying program for us. We were a cooperative venture with a European organization, Dax Over Normandy, who...
And Dax refers to...
Dakotas. That's what the Europeans call C-47s. Make a long story short, their organization was not quite as good as Eric's, and soon Eric kind of took the ball and set it up. But the bottom line was we did many formation flights, showed our aircraft off, continued to practice to get ready for parachute drops, and eventually the flyover over the presidential flyover over the memorial in Normandy.
How many airplanes actually dropped paratroopers? Did all of you do that?
Of the 23 aircraft, roughly half of them were equipped to drop paratroopers.
Right. And they dropped them at night or during the day?
No, we did the drops during the day. We decided, just like the same thing, we decided to use GPSs instead of newly minted navigators and sextants. We chose to drop during the day. And the mass parachute drop was in the afternoon of June the 5th over a town called Saint-Hervien.
To all of you, what was this experience like for all of you personally when you took off from England to fly over Normandy, over the Channel? What was that experience like for each of you?
I guess I have the mic, so I'll speak for
you. Yeah, go.
One of our crew members said something very, very simple, but I think it's very telling. We're flying with ghosts.
Wow.
And that... Each and every time, we know that we're flying with ghosts. The people that flew our aircraft, jumped out of our aircraft, our D-Day veteran aircraft, our airplanes that actually did fly on D-Day. But especially when you're going across the Channel, especially when you're flying across the hallowed ground that is where all of this took place, you really feel those ghosts with you.
Yeah.
Well. We don't have nearly enough time to cover all the emotions that on this trip, but as a pilot, I mean, one of my longtime bucket list items was to fly a Warbird across the North Atlantic, and that was a neat experience. Certainly flying down the beach at Normandy on June 6th, you know, over the American cemetery with 14, I think we had 13 or 14 airplanes in that formation, was an emotional highlight. The Berlin Airlift piece was really incredible to see. You know, one of the things that struck me was American ingenuity and exceptionalism. You know, anybody would have said D-Day can't be done. We had 15 airplanes, or American airplanes, 23 total. And the logistics that it took to launch those was huge. To imagine the magnitude of managing a mission with 800 airplanes is just beyond comprehension. Just... literally, I mean, you'd say it was impossible, and yet American ingenuity and got it done. The Berlin Airlift, there's no way that the Americans can supply 2.2 million people for almost a year, over a year, with food and fuel with airplanes, and yet American ingenuity and exceptionalism did it. So, you know, an incredible feeling of pride of what Americans can accomplish. And the fact that we build over 10,000 of these airplanes in short order, just... so many overwhelming emotions. And finally, I would say, as an EA member, an AOPA member, having the opportunity to fly our airplanes in European airspace for 6 weeks, we enjoy an astronomical amount of freedom in America. But slowly but surely, it's being eroded by, you know, user fees and all those other things. And I come home strongly dedicated to make sure that we gin up the support we need to keep those things at Bay so we can continue to have the freedom to fly in America as we do here today.
And besides the 800 airplanes, 150,000 troops.
Absolutely.
Biggest invasion ever. John?
You know, David, the thing that was absolutely emotional for me was on June 6th, and many of you may have seen some media coverage of it, I was privileged to fly in the formation of 13 aircraft that flew over the American cemetery on June 6th over President Trump and President Macron from France. Prior to that, and Eric was the flight leader of the whole thing, and I was back in number four, but prior to that, it was a beautiful day, very much like today, not European at all. And we took off from Kahn Airport and formed up into this giant formation. It looks giant today. It was nothing like what you guys did in D-Day, but in our own little regards, it was pretty big. And then we flew in a holding pattern from Utah all the way down basically to Pondhuhak. It turned around and flew back. So for an hour and a half in preparation for the flyover, we're flying over the beaches 75 years later that these brave men jumped on, okay? And when we finally left the initial point and flew over the American cemetery, it was a sea of people, and all the beaches were absolutely clogged with people to be there for the 75th anniversary. In fact, the roads leading into the beaches, you could see 100 tour buses parked 3 miles away where people were forced to walk down to the beach. Wow. And there were vehicles, and there were landing craft, and there were many, many people, and it was just an astounding thing to see from the air. But to me, the question about what did it mean emotionally, you know, my first job in the world was to go into combat, and I did a couple of tours doing that. And then to have the link from the generation that preceded me, and I do believe they're the greatest generation, the ones who jumped in, to be able to fly 75 years later in a formation to honor them was deeply moving to me. And I had a real link from our generation, at least, to your generation.